Now, shall we begin?
At the end of a typically insight-rich essay in which he expressed principled dissent from the euphoric consensus regarding the recent actions of FBI Director James Comey, Judge Andrew Napolitano quoted the famous lines from Robert Bolt's play A Man for All Seasons about Sir Thomas More. In his play A Man for All Seasons, Robert Bolt shows Sir Thomas More arguing with William Roper, a colleague, who suggests that government lawbreaking can be justified for the greater good, particularly if the target is the devil, which Trump has called Clinton, writes Judge Napolitano. Moore demolishes that argument in a few now iconic lines. And when the last law was down and the devil turned round on you, where would you hide, Roper, the laws all being flat? This country's planted thick with laws from coast to coast, man's laws, not God's, and if you cut them down and you're just the man to do it, do you really think you could stand upright in the winds that would blow then? Yes, I'd give the devil the benefit of law, for my own safety's sake. To my friends who have rejoiced in James Comey's letter, concludes Judge Napolitano, please take warning that, as more accurately predicted, the tables can be turned. If there is any moral lesson in all this, it is that the history of human freedom consists of paying careful attention to constitutional guarantees and legal protections, no matter the reputation of the accused. We know what the FBI is. The FBI is, in effect, the Praetorian Guard of the political elite. This reminds me a great deal of something that Montesquieu wrote in his essay The Spirit of Laws, a little less than 30 years before the founding of the American Republic. Recalling the experience of Rome as it descended into the abyss of dictatorship, Montesquieu observed, instead of being roused from her lethargy by Caesar, Tiberius, Gaius Claudius, Nero, and Domitian, she riveted every day her chains, and this was because if she struck some blows, her aim was at the tyrant, not at the tyranny. Hillary Clinton, of course, is a tyrant in terms of her record and in terms of her ambitions and her disposition. I contend the same thing is true of Donald Trump. The problem is not the personality of the tyrant. The problem consists of the institutions of tyranny of which the FBI is a central part. The FBI is the regime's political police. In a very specific sense, it's the secret police. Contact an FBI field office. Talk with a press representative of that entity, and then ask for that individual's name, and you will be told that it is their policy not to disclose their names. In a strict and specific sense, they are the secret police. The FBI is to the regime in Washington what the Cheka was, and is, to the Soviet government in Russia and the post-Soviet Russian government. They are referred to as the security organs over in Russia. The FBI got a head start on the Cheka. It was actually founded before the Cheka came into existence. The individual who gave life to the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, was the keeper of the kompromat, to use the Russian expression. He was the keeper of the files that contained all the compromising details on public and private figures. Although the Constitution specifies only three crimes that fall within federal jurisdiction, over the last several decades, nearly every conceivable criminal offense has been federalized. This gives the FBI plenary self-assigned jurisdiction to investigate the actions of Americans, particularly those who become politically troublesome. Many of the same people who are hailing James Comey to the skies this week and talking about the FBI as the last redoubt of patriots within the political infrastructure a week ago, we're celebrating the fact that the FBI got its ass kicked in Portland, Oregon, after they had infested a peaceful, albeit somewhat disruptive, protest occupation of a piece of territory illegally occupied by the federal government by Ammon and Ryan Bundy and several others. They had infested that movement with at least 15 secretive informants and provocateurs. The FBI had its head handed to it in court, and this was properly applauded by many of the same people who are pretending now that somehow the FBI is our boon ally in an effort to prevent the ascension of Scarlet Hillary to the imperial throne in Washington. Apparently, there are people who believe that the purpose and function of the FBI at this juncture in our nation's history is to behave as the Praetorians did in elevating Claudius to the emperor's chair in post-Republican Rome. There is a sense in which the security organs in Russia played a broadly similar role in the Soviet deep state. And quite frankly, for more than 22 years, the union between the FBI and the post-KGB security organs in Russia has been a formal one. In July of 1994, then-FBI Director Louis Freeh traveled to Moscow and toured the dungeons at the former KGB's headquarters at Lubyanka Square and then signed a joint cooperation agreement with Sergei Stepashin of the Russian FSB, which is the lineal descendant of the KGB. We know the FBI. We have seen its handiwork. At Ruby Ridge in August of 1992, in Waco in April of 1993, on Oregon's State Highway 395 just this past January, the FBI acted as the regime's willing executioners. Just within the past several weeks in Kansas, we have seen the fruits of the FBI's Homeland Security Theater operations, where they infiltrated and radicalized a small knot of so-called right-wing extremists and then engineered a false flag terrorism operation for the purpose of tuning the public atmosphere for a crackdown against the supposed internal enemy, which consists of people who, in this instance, were supporters of Donald Trump. Of course, they will not limit the scope of that crackdown merely to people who have been caught in the undertow of Donald Trump's authoritarian punitive populism. There is no sense in which the FBI is a benign or commendable or patriotic organization, using the term patriotic to refer to an organization that recognizes and subscribes to and endorses constitutional limits on the scope of its activities. It is the regime's secret police. It is one of the most visible elements of the deep state here in the United States. It has no constitutional warrant to carry out any of its functions. It's in the business of consolidating power, of investigating people who are considered to be political threats to the ruling elite, in fomenting, instigating, and capitalizing upon false flag operations. If they succeed in preventing Hillary's ascent, our situation will be no better, because we would have prevented the rise of one tyrant while preserving the implements of tyranny. Judge Napolitano offers these warnings. One of the most dangerous tendencies of big government is the generation of a police state, wherein laws, rules, and procedures are primarily written and can often be bent to aid law enforcement when it is encroaching on our personal freedoms. We saw a terrifying example of that last week when FBI Director James Comey behaved as if he were his most infamous predecessor, J. Edgar Hoover. I have argued that Comey's July 5th decision was dead wrong. There is a mountain of evidence with which to indict and convict Clinton on espionage charges. The decision to which the judge refers, of course, was the announcement by Comey, which he shouldn't have made, that he was recommending against an indictment of Hillary Clinton. Yet it should have been presented to a grand jury. It was not, rather than at a news conference. The July 5th announcement was bizarre in that it not only exonerated Clinton, but also described the quantity and quality of the evidence against her. This insulted the agents who worked on the case and produced the lowest collective FBI morale since Watergate. If Comey sent his Friday letter to address the problems he caused by his July 5th announcement, he did the wrong thing for the wrong reasons. But perhaps the gravest of Comey's violations, continues Judge Napolitano, by the way, no defender of Hillary Clinton, is that of the constitutional guarantee of due process. The essence of due process is notice and fairness. How exquisitely unfair of Comey to say, in effect, we have something that warrants investigation of you, yet we don't know its significance, so we can't say what it is. This is reminiscent of Franz Kafka's The Trial, in which the lead character is being pursued for a year on unnamed charges against which he cannot defend himself. What they did, what he did specifically, Director Comey, to Hillary Clinton, is par for the course for the treatment of mundanes by the FBI. There is, I suppose, some visceral satisfaction to be had in seeing somebody who so capably incarnates everything vile about our system, being on the receiving end of such treatment. Take that satisfaction for what it's worth, but do not forget that the FBI can and will do that to you or to somebody you care about who has not done anything even remotely comparable to what Hillary Clinton has done. I will have a great deal more to say about this on the other side of the break. This is Will Grigg with Freedom Zealot Radio on the Liberty News Radio Network. Please stand by for more sedition after this.
Intelligence community and others involved have informally gotten together, and with their permission, I am beginning to announce that we've initiated a counter coup through Julian Assange and WikiLeaks when Comey had to open up the case of Hillary Clinton and discuss the emails that were involved with the Anthony Weiner case. It was not the case itself that was as important as the fact that this was the entree for many of us in the counter coup to say to the administration, we have your number. Not only do we have your number, we're going to stop you from making Hillary the president of the United States. And at the same time, we will convict and indict the president of the United States, Loretta Lynch, and many others who were involved in the cover-up of the massive corruption that occurred under the Clinton Foundation.
As I read the following panegyric to the deep state's most visible organ, the FBI, bear in mind two maxims. The first is, once again, from Montesquieu, which is that Rome lost its freedom, such as it was, because Romans focused on the tyrant and not on the tyranny. The second comes from John Locke, which is that tyranny consists of the exercise of power beyond right. In a constitutional system, the supposed right to exercise power is supposedly delimited by written law. In a state of nature, of course, the exercise of power over another human being is tyranny. It is innately and inescapably tyranny. The following is an essay written by Mike Adams, who identifies himself as the Health Ranger, and I think it's fairly typical of some of the celebratory commentary that we're hearing regarding James Comey and the faction within the FBI he apparently represents intervening in the election against Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, of course, has been demonized because she is demonic. It's just a question of holding up a mirror to that person, her personality, and her record. I will share once again the maxim from Thomas More, as depicted in Robert Bolt's A Man for All Seasons. You have to give even the devil the benefit of law for your own safety's sake. To all the men and women of the FBI who are now working diligently to bring down the corrupt Department of Justice and the criminal Clinton cartel, we the people support your effort, begins Mike Adams. Agents of the FBI are right now seeking to topple the criminal corruption at the DOJ and targeting all the following individuals who may soon be wearing prison stripes: Attorney General Loretta Lynch, Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, Assistant Attorney General Peter Kasnick, Assistant Attorney General John P. Carlin, Assistant Attorney General Leslie Caldwell. Once again, Montesquieu, they're focusing on the tyrants, not on the tyranny. According to a former U.S. Justice Attorney Joe DeGeneva, disgruntled FBI agents are digging tunnels under the Justice Department. They are going to sink that place. As an investigative journalist, continues Adams, the thing that really strikes me about all that we're witnessing today is just how incredibly stupid the Clinton co-conspirators are. It's obvious that none of them have any idea how technology works. They don't understand real-time online backups, email originating server authentication, or the fundamentals of digital security. They're arrogant, lazy, and stupid, and that's exactly why they're now getting caught red-handed and may eventually find themselves going to jail. I think he's making scores, if not hundreds, of unwarranted assumptions about what's actually happening. To continue, remember, nobody in the corrupt Obama or Clinton regime attained their positions of authority based on merit. Most of them just bribed their way into high office or blackmailed somebody in the Clinton cartel to achieve power, because that's the way corrupt Democrats do things, you see. That's not a partisan phenomenon. That's something that is done by people on both sides of the very narrow partisan divide. To continue, the FBI, on the other hand, tends to recruit intelligent people based on merit, not on how politically connected somebody's daddy is in Washington. As a result, the FBI's culture is one of more independent thinking, hard work, and merit-based professional advancement. That is manifestly not the case in the FBI. And even if it were, you'd be dealing here with people of competence who are doing evil things, as opposed to people who are inept and doing evil things. No wonder the FBI's agents are seething at the corruption and criminality of the Clinton Mafia. It's a cesspool of unearned power from a cabal of elitist nitwits who are too obnoxious and arrogant to believe anything can ever bring them down. That's why the scrappy, hard-working men and women of the FBI are finding so much joy in toppling the Clinton criminal cartel. It's sheer happiness to pull the plug out from under such a massive cesspool of criminal filth parading around as political leadership and watch the bewildered heads roll down the steps of Capitol Hill. Thunk, 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 splat. That, of course, is imagery derivative of the Jacobin Revolution in France. In fact, it's a joy for all informed Americans to even imagine such an outcome. That's why I wanted to let the FBI know that all the patriots across America are with you on this one. If the FBI brings down the Department of Justice, there will be victory parades in the streets. He is assuming that you can cast out Beelzebub by Beelzebub's power. The FBI's reputation among patriots took a huge hit with the Oregon Rancher fiasco last year, but I'm willing to bet that right about now all kinds of FBI agents are realizing the Oregon ranchers were right. He's got no reason, apart from his own desperate wish that it be so, to believe any such damn thing. I'd be willing to bet that those FBI agents right now are redoubling their efforts to infiltrate land rights organizations and to ensure that the show trial in Nevada next year has a different outcome. The corrupt U.S. government really is a threat to us all. Thanks to the Clintons, the FBI sees that the same way the Oregon ranchers did. Once again, there's no reason at all beyond the most emancipated supposition to profess to believe such a thing. And just as the ranchers hope to end BLM corruption across America's western lands, the FBI is now working to end DOJ corruption in D.C. In both cases, you've got hard-working cowboys fighting for a free nation by ridding this country of the corrupt criminal class running the show in Washington. I would be willing to contemplate the possibility that this assessment would be right if the FBI were to do one simple thing. Expose the names of the hostage rescue team operators who arranged the murder of Lavoie Finicum. They're not going to do this. If FBI agents have now awakened to all this, that of course is an unproven if, the awakening is likely to keep spreading through the halls of D.C., including the Pentagon itself, where a military coup against a corrupt Clinton regime would be extremely popular among police officers, federal agents, patriots, and ordinary Americans, and here he's describing undisguised Praetorianism. That's where this will likely wind up if the FBI fails to bring down the regime. In fact, my analysis of the three waves of revolution that will assault a Clinton regime looks like this, and if Trump wins, then the problem is already solved. Montesquieu, once again, he wants to swap out the tyrant rather than to abolish the tyranny. Wave 1, the FBI and other intelligence insiders. This process is already underway and may prove sufficient to end Hillary's chances before Election Day. Wave 2, the U.S. military, an armed military occupation of Washington, the elimination of the criminal Clinton cartel, and the restoration of fair and free elections. I've lived under martial law. It doesn't work that way. Wave 3, a citizens' revolt, armed American patriots storming Washington and taking their country back from the criminals who stole it from them. Only if all three of these waves fail will the Clintons remain in power. And even then, most of America will refuse to recognize any legitimacy of a Clinton presidency. I've got a better idea. Let's not recognize the legitimacy of any presidency. Focus on the tyranny, not upon the tyrant. Donald Trump has been waddling around saying that he wants to drain the swamp. No. He wants to keep the swamp and swap out the current population of alligators for alligators of a slightly different variety. I'll be back in just a minute. Before FBI Director James Comey rocked the world last week, Rudy Giuliani was on Fox, where he volunteered, unprodded by any question, quote, "I think he's," meaning Donald Trump, "got a surprise or two that you're going to hear about in the next few days. I mean, I'm talking about some pretty big surprises," begins an article in the Daily Beast by Wayne Barrett. Pressed for specifics, he said, "We've got a couple of things up our sleeve that should turn this thing around." The man who now leads Lock Her Up chants at Trump rallies spent decades of his life as a federal prosecutor and then mayor, working closely with the FBI and especially its New York office. One of Giuliani's security firms employed a former head of the New York FBI office and other alumni of it. It was agents of that office probing Anthony Weiner's alleged sexting of a minor who pressed Comey to authorize the review of possible Hillary Clinton-related emails on a Weiner device that led to the explosive letter the director wrote Congress. Hours after Comey's letter about the renewed probe was leaked on Friday, Giuliani went on a radio show and attributed the director's surprise action to, quote, "the pressure of a group of FBI agents who don't look at it politically." The other rumor that I get is there's a kind of revolution going on inside the FBI about the original conclusion not to charge Clinton being completely unjustified and almost a slap in the face to the FBI's integrity, said Giuliani. I know that from former agents. I know that even from a few active agents. Along with Giuliani's other connections to the New York FBI agents, his former law firm, then called Bracewell Giuliani, has long been general counsel to the FBI Agents Association, or FBIAA, which represents 13,000 former and current agents. The group, born in the New York FBI office in the early 80s, was headed until Monday by Ray Tarish, an agent who just retired from the New York FBI office. In Tarish's letter to the association stepping down as president because he's retiring from the bureau to take a job within the banking industry, he wrote that, "We find our work, our integrity questioned because of it," adding, "We will not be used for political gains." It's useful to look into Rudolph Giuliani's philosophy and background, because that would almost certainly inform the Trump administration's perspective on law and order. It's entirely possible that he would be the Attorney General under Donald Trump, that he would replace Loretta Lynch. The removal of Loretta Lynch would not be a lamentable development. The ascension of Rudolph Giuliani to that office would be a horrifying development. According to fascism, wrote Mario Palmieri, who was Benito Mussolini's chief ideologist in his book The Philosophy of Fascism, a great spiritual life cannot take place unless the state has risen to a position of preeminence in the world of man. The curtailment of liberty thus becomes justified at once with this need of raising the state to its rightful position. That's precisely the perspective that Rudolph Giuliani has on the question of the individual's role in society. He recited from the same status psaltery during a 1994 symposium on urban crime that was sponsored by the New York Post. At the time, we should recall, Giuliani was stumping on behalf of Bill and Hillary Clinton's Omnibus Crime Bill, which drastically expanded the power and reach of the police state and the power of federal and state prosecutors. We look upon authority too often and focus over and over again for 30 or 40 or 50 years as if there is something wrong with authority, stated Giuliani. We only see the oppressive side of authority. Maybe it comes out of our history and our background. What we don't see is that freedom is not a concept in which people can do anything they want, be anything they can be. We're going to come through this when we realize that it's all about, ultimately, individual responsibility, he continued. That, in fact, the Criminal Act is about individual responsibility and the building of the respect for the law and ethics is also a matter of individual responsibility. Freedom is about authority. Freedom is about the willingness of every single human being to cede to lawful authority a great deal of discretion about what you do. There is, I contend, a tacit dichotomy in Giuliani's view of authority and responsibility, and it was made vivid in his relationship with a very colorful figure, a former New York police commissioner by the name of Bernard Carrick. Authority is the exclusive possession of the political class, from Giuliani's perspective. Individual responsibility, respect for the law, and ethics are for the lesser beings who don't belong to that exalted caste. At the time, circa 1994 through about 2001-2002, Giuliani was a tight and fast ally of Bill and Hillary Clinton, as was Donald Trump. Now they find themselves on different sides in a factional fight within the political elite that I think represents, if you will, the plate tectonics of the deep state at work over which side is going to be the who and which side will be the whom. 6 years after offering his little tutorial about individual responsibility, respect for law, and ethics, Giuliani appointed Bernard Carrick to the post of police commissioner, despite the fact that he knew that Carrick had ties to organized crime. Carrick's chief qualification for that post, according to his many detractors, were his canine loyalty to Giuliani and his gift for self-promotion. He became Giuliani's driver and bodyguard during the 1993 mayoral campaign, after which he was appointed head of the Corrections Department, where he reportedly did a more than adequate job, although he turned the department and a related foundation, over which he presided in an apparent conflict of interest, into a patronage piñata. If you will, he had his own pay-to-play operation, albeit on a much smaller scale than the Clinton Foundation. Carrick spent much of his own term as commissioner writing an autobiography, notes Fred Kaplan of Slate magazine. This involved, inter alia, sending police officers to Ohio at taxpayer expense to pin down details about his long-deceased mother and using others, including a homicide investigator, to track down his publisher's missing cell phone. One wonders how much respect for law Carrick displayed as police commissioner by using police officers as research assistants and errand boys. Under the Giuliani doctrine, however, such questions are moot, at least as they apply to those clothed in the state's authority, assuming, of course, now that they belong to the proper faction. For reasons that, as far as I can tell, were rooted in pure cronyism, Carrick was sent to Iraq in May 2003 to supervise reconstruction of that country's civilian police force. That was during the orgiastic festival of corruption and cronyism called the Reconstruction of that country. His job, as he defined it in a conversation with the State Department reconstruction official in charge of the Iraqi police force, was to bring more media attention to the good work on police because the situation is probably not as bad as people think it is. Carrick spent roughly 3 months in Iraq. He, like the other apparatchiks, were working in what was called the reconstruction effort, was building a resume. In late 2004, when Tom Ridge resigned as the first commissar for Homeland Security, Giuliani lobbied Bush very hard and successfully for Carrick to be appointed successor. The New York Daily News at the time reported that Rudy cashed in a chip on this one, according to a White House source. However, like Zoe Baird, one of Bill Clinton's failed attorney general nominees, Carrick was caught in a nanny trap and forced to withdraw his nomination. Carrick most likely withdrew, in my estimation, because his confirmation hearings, however perfunctory, would likely have exposed a great deal more about the squalid underside of the then-nascent crony-capitalist garrison state regime. For instance, it would have been interesting to learn more about Kerik's ties to Taser International. They are the kind folks who manufacture the portable electric chair starter kit. He joined TI's board in 2002 after leaving his post as New York's police commissioner and made $6 million cashing in company stock options in November 2004, just before Amnesty International released a report documenting that scores of people in the U.S. had been killed by this supposedly non-lethal implement of torture. What role would Kerik have played if Rudolph Giuliani would have won the Republican nomination in 2008 and won the general election? I don't think Rudolph Giuliani would have been so foolish as to appoint Kerik to any position that required Senate confirmation, but within the metastasizing Homeland Security bureaucracy, there could have been a place found for him. I wholeheartedly suspect that if Trump is victorious on Tuesday and Giuliani is appointed Attorney General of the United States, Rudy will find a place for his friend Bernie, who at present is a consultant and commentator for Fox News, of course. Swapping out the Clinton clique doesn't mean that things are likely to improve because a different congregation of alligators has now been let loose in the same swamp. I'll be back in just a few minutes. Crash of Flight 800 into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Long Island on July 17, 1996, was the first big aviation story I covered as a journalist, recalled Stephen Pope of Flying Magazine in that magazine's June 20, 2013 issue. I can still clearly remember standing on the bridge that crosses the Shinnecock Inlet and watching as scallop trawlers brought mangled pieces of the Boeing 747 to shore. It was unsettling to think that 230 people had lost their lives aboard what was left of that airplane. After the most expensive accident investigation in its history, the NTSB 4 years later determined a spark caused an explosion in the center fuel tank, bringing the jetliner down. I was satisfied. Investigators dismissed speculation that a Navy missile downed Flight 800, going so far as to call it a loony conspiracy theory. They didn't merely call it a loony conspiracy theory. Investigators working for the FBI actively intimidated and suppressed eyewitness accounts that contradicted the official claims that this was an accident. Now we learn, continues Pope, that former NTSB and TWA investigators who weren't allowed to provide dissenting opinions when the original accident report was released are speaking out. Their story will be told in the documentary that will air next month on the 17th anniversary of the crash. According to statements they apparently make in the film, they believe the official explanation is wrong and the explosion that brought down Flight 800 came from outside the airplane. They claim to have proof. James Kallstrom, who headed the investigation into the TWA 800 crash for the FBI, reacted angrily to the renewed claims that a missile brought down the flight. "It's just outrageous and preposterous," he told ABC News. "It has absolutely no connection to the truth and will not stand the test of time and will not stand the test of experts." Bearing in mind the role of James Kallstrom in shepherding this investigation and effectively covering up alternate and plausible theories for what happened, we read the following from the Daily Beast. Back in August, during a contentious CNN interview about Comey's July announcement clearing Hillary Clinton of criminal charges, Giuliani advertised his illicit FBI sources, who circumvented bureau guidelines to discuss a case with a public partisan. "The decision perplexes me. It perplexes Jim Kallstrom, who worked for him," meaning Comey. "It perplexes numerous FBI agents who talk to me all the time, and it embarrasses some FBI agents." Kallstrom is the former head of the New York FBI office, installed in that post in the 1990s by then-FBI Director Louis Freeh, one of Giuliani's longtime friends. Kallstrom has, like Giuliani, been on an anti-Comey romp for months, most often on Fox, where he's called the Clintons a crime family. He has been invoking unnamed FBI agents who contact him to complain about Comey's exoneration of Clinton in one interview after another, positioning himself as an apolitical champion of FBI values. Last October, after President Obama told 60 Minutes that the Clinton emails weren't a national security issue, Megyn Kelly interviewed Kallstrom on Fox. "You know a lot of the agents involved in this investigation," she said. "How angry must they be tonight?" "I know some of the agents," said Kallstrom. "I know some of the supervisors, and I know the senior staff, and they are PO'd. I mean, no question. This is like someone driving another nail in the coffin of the criminal justice system." Kallstrom declared that, "If it's pushed under the rug, the agents won't take that sitting down." Kelly confirmed that it's going to get leaked. When Comey cleared Clinton this July, Kallstrom was on Fox again, declaring, "I've talked to about 15 different agents today, both on the job and off the job, who are basically worried about the reputation of the agency they love." They're worried about the reputation of the agency. That's a particularized concern. They're not worried about the integrity of the system or about holding people accountable. They're worried about the reputation of their agency. That is a narrow, proprietary, partisan concern. The number grew dramatically by Labor Day weekend when Comey released Clinton's FBI interview and other documents, and Kallstrom told Kelly he was talking to 50 different people in and out of the agency, retired agents, all of whom, he said, were basically disgusted by Comey's latest release. By September 28th, Kallstrom said he'd been contacted by hundreds of people, including a lot of retired agents and a few on the job, declaring the agents involved in this thing feel like they've been stabbed in the back. "So," he said, "I think we're going to see a lot more of the facts come out in the course of the next few months. That's my prediction." Kallstrom, whose exchanges with active agents about particular cases are as contrary to FBI policy as Giuliani's, formally and passionately endorsed Trump this week on Stuart Varney's Fox Business show, adding that Clinton is a pathological liar. "Of that description, I have no doubt. I happen to think that both major party candidates are pathological liars." Kallstrom, who served as a Marine before becoming an agent, didn't mention that a charity he'd founded decades ago, and that's now called the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, was the single biggest beneficiary of Trump's promise to raise millions for veterans when he boycotted the Iowa primary debate. A foundation official said that Trump's $1 million donation this May, atop $100,000 that had given in March, were the biggest individual grants it had ever received. The Trump Foundation had contributed another $230,000 in prior years, and Trump won the organization's top honor in its annual Waldorf Astoria Gala in 2015. The charity, which Kallstrom has chaired without pay since its founding, says it has given away $64 million in scholarships and other aid to veteran families. Rush Limbaugh is a director and has given it enormous exposure on his show and helped it fundraise. Its executive director also worked at the highest levels of New York Governor George Pataki's Republican administration, and its vice president is also the regional vice president for Trump Hotels in the New York area. The FBI New York office, the charity's 2015 newsletter noted, then employed 100 former Marines. Kallstrom, who first worked with Giuliani when the future mayor was a young assistant prosecutor in the early 70s, was Pataki's public safety director for 5 years after the 9/11 attacks, and claims he was the one who recommended Comey to Pataki, who got the Bush White House to name him to Giuliani's old job, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District in 2001. Comey had worked in the Southern District for years, hired as a young assistant in 1987 by Louis Freeh, then a top Giuliani deputy. Kallstrom's victory tour this weekend also included an appearance on Fox with former Westchester District Attorney Jeanine Pirro, another close associate of Pataki's, who complained on the air that she'd been the victim in 2006 when word emerged that the U.S. attorney and FBI were probing her in the midst of a race she eventually lost to Andrew Cuomo to become New York Attorney General. Her concern about the political impact of law enforcement leaks, though, didn't extend to Democrat Hillary Clinton. "He couldn't hold on to this any longer," Kallstrom said of Comey. "Who knows? Maybe the locals would have done it," he added, a reference to leaks that elicited glee from Pirro, who echoed, "New York City, that's my thing." In a wide-ranging phone interview on Tuesday with the Daily Beast, Karlstrom first repeated his claim that he gets hundreds and hundreds of calls and emails, but stressed they all came from retired agents, adding that he didn't want to talk about agents on the job. Then he acknowledged that he did interact with active agents. The agents mostly contacted him before the recent Comey letter, because in all but two cases they agreed with what he was saying in his TV appearances, noting that those two exceptions both thought, "I should be more supportive of Comey." Giuliani and Karlstrom claimed that the agents revolting against Comey's handling of Hillary Clinton were doing it because they want apolitical investigations, with all targets treated the same, continues the story from the Daily Beast. But neither of them, much less FBI brass or agents, were publicly upset when the worst Justice Department scandal of modern history exploded in 2007 with Karl Rove, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, and the Bush White House swamped by allegations that they'd tried to force out 9 U.S. attorneys and replace them with loyal Bushies, as Gonzalez's chief of staff put it. Democratic officials, candidates, and fundraisers were 5 times as likely to be prosecuted by Bush's Justice Department than Republicans. Then, at the top of the polls in the 2008 presidential race, Giuliani had to answer questions about it and said that he thought Gonzalez should get the benefit of the doubt, calling him a decent man a few months before he resigned. "We should try to remove on both sides as much of the partisanship as possible," lectured Giuliani. He recalled that strict rules were put into place while he was at the top levels of justice in the aftermath of Watergate, limiting contact between law enforcement and political figures, a particular irony in view of the fact that he talks freely today about engaging in just such conversations on national television, oblivious to the fact that he is now a political figure. If Trump prevails at the polls and is inaugurated as president next year, that's the culture that is going to define the priorities of the Justice Department, most likely under Attorney General Rudolph Giuliani. They will reward that faction within the deep state that helped to elevate Donald Trump to the imperial purple. If Hillary Clinton prevails at the polls and is inaugurated president, the first imperatrix of the post-constitutional order, she will almost certainly begin a purge of the FBI and the Justice Department, of people who were considered disloyal. In neither case is there going to be a restoration of anything resembling the rule of law. The solution to our problems does not run through the White House. Thank you for joining me this week on Freedom Zealot Radio. Please join me online at freedominourtime.blogspot.com and at the newly inaugurated libertarianinstitute.org. I will return in a week, and until then, as always, doom spirito pugno, while I breathe, I fight. Good night, God bless, and may we send the state back to the hell that spawned it.
What do you want to do now, Captain?
The same thing we always do. Fight them until we can't.